You are listening to the Archery Maniacs Podcast.
This is Remy Warren.
I am Rihanna Carey.
My name is Adam Foss.
This is Paul Tedford, professional archer.
Hey everyone, I'm Christy Titus, and you are listening to Archery Maniac.
We cover everything archery, from the hunting side to the tournament side, with stories, tips and tactics, gear reviews, and more.
That helped my tuning game so much when I made sure that all my arrows were square.
And I'm just staring into his eyes. Blood's dripping off of its tines. Mud is everywhere.
The clarity these mavens offer is amazing.
I'm just like Spider-Man, you know, on this rock, you know, just laying there.
Belly crawling in there, and I can barely fit in there, and I can hear the cat growling at me.
So I put my hand on his shoulder and pushed him, and we just ran at this elephant.
In this episode, Tony Treach brings the fire. I am telling you, he breaks down his process for studying for out-of-state hunts and scouting and all that kind of stuff. What he asked game biologists, what he asked game wardens, and everything in between. This episode will change your hunting game. So tune in, take some notes, and learn from an awesome DIY hunter. Now, let's get into the show.
This is Tony Treach, and you're listening to Archery Maniacs with Zach Harold.
Hey, everyone, and obviously I'm your host, Zach Harold, and today Tony is going to cover his preseason scouting and some of the things that he does when it comes time to apply for tags, and a little bit about diving into the research that he does once he knows what tags he has drawn. It's not a super, super daunting task like it sometimes looks. I know sometimes when you're very first wanting to hunt other states, sometimes that thought of having to do all the research is kind of scary. But there are definitely systems and methods and companies out there to help you. Hopefully this podcast and what Tony uses and does will help you guys out. So thanks, Tony, for hopping on the show.
No problem. My pleasure. It can be a rather daunting task at first when you before you've dove in and done it once or twice. It can be a bit overwhelming, and especially if you're doing it alone, as all my hunts are, it's taking that leap of faith the first time is not so easy. There's also, you know, like you say, lots of different companies out there that'll help you. There's tag services that'll help you apply. I don't hire anybody to apply for my tags for me, but I definitely use information from websites like Go Hunt and Hunt and Fool and Eastman's. And I mean, if I hear somebody talking down the street in the coffee shop about elk, I'm listening. I don't care where it comes from. I can decide later on if it's good or bad information, but soak up everything you can.
Yeah, and I just have a question about those few that you named.
Yep.
Do you kind of rely on one of them heavier than others, or do you feel that utilizing the three as a team, they kind of fill in the gaps that the one or the other may not have?
Yeah, well, with Eastman's, you know, it's not, you're not going to call in and talk to anybody.
It's just data.
So it's data and some opinions. And if you compare all three of them, they don't always all agree. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. I'd be a subscriber to Eastman's even if I didn't have, even without the research section at the back. I just like the people writing there, and I just like the magazine.
Yep.
The Hunt and Fool is great. I became a member about the same time that one of their hunt consultants joined up, Garth Jensen, and I've actually developed a friendship with him, and he's been great. I think he's that way with everybody too. He's just a great guy. You can bounce ideas off him. And there's some other guys there too. Robert Hanneman is a wealth of knowledge. Logan Hedges is he's one of those guys that nobody really knows about, but I mean, he's got a lot of information. And is also a great guy. So the Go Hunt, you know, that boy, their statistics that came out this year, in there, I forget what they call it, but the new version,
Filter 2.0.
Yeah. That's some good stuff. Again, you're not going to have that one-on-one, you know, shoot, you got a question about, you know, something, or you're not going to call in there and talk to me. I'm sure they would talk to you, but that's not something that they market it as. But, man, there's just so much data there that you can pull out and use. And that's one of the things that I look for. And we were talking before the podcast a little bit, before we said we should be recording this. I like to look for hunts that I can draw. I mean, I don't want to be waiting a long time. I try to put together enough hunts, enough tags each season that I can, you know, I leave home here sometime in August and with the truck loaded down, and I want to have it all scheduled out where I'm going to hunt, you know, from state to state to state for 8 to 12 weeks. And, I need to have tags. So, and there's not enough, you know, I need to rely on at least one or two draw tags a year to go with over the counter type stuff, like, over the counter units. And I call it over the counter unit, but you know, the general tags in Montana or the elk tags in Colorado. So what I look for is, you know, and I shouldn't say it's with all states. I still shoot for the moon and, in a few states like Utah, I'm applying for, you know, great tags. And if I hit, great. If I don't, it's no big deal. I should say they also offer the general tag for deer in Utah, which actually we'll be hunting that for the first time this year. But, you know, awesome. For the limited entry tags, you know, I shoot for the moon. Same thing with Nevada. I'm not looking to hunt Nevada every year. That's going to be one of my – when I draw it, it's going to be something special.
Gotcha.
But in Arizona, I mean, I drew Arizona deer and elk last year. I applied for the easiest to draw elk tag and the easiest deer tag that is in the, that's not over the counter. And did not have that many points. Man, I think I had 4 points when I hit them both. So
wow.
You can do it. And the same thing this year, I was lucky to draw a Idaho moose tag, and I applied for one of the easiest units, not the easiest, but it's, you know, I had, you know, last year I had a 12% chance and I didn't draw it. This year, obviously I did, and I won't know until next year what the odds actually were for this season, but, you know, that's pretty good when you consider, you know, a lot of other states, you're looking at a less than a 1% chance. But it's also not going to be a trophy unit for that. You know, I'm going to have to hunt a little harder and maybe do a little more research, spend some more time in order to get out a bigger bowl. But and who knows? It might just be even a unit that doesn't even have the trophy quality or the, you know, that some of the other units have. I know the genetics are there. I've been doing research on it, and I've talked to, you know, I've talked to biologists, I've talked to game wardens, I've talked to people that have hunted it. Social media is great when you know, and people also like to share information on once in a lifetime tags like that, like that they do not share information in that way for like elk and deer hunts.
Right. People,
yeah, they're, you know, they know, when they know they can never draw it again, they're more than happy to tell you what they found and what they saw. And so that's my game plan going into the draw systems. I got maybe two states really that I just, you know, I shoot for the moon for the best tags. And then, you know, and that'd be in Utah and Nevada, minus the general deer hunt in Utah. And then everything else I try to, you know, every year I'm trying to draw a middle of the road tag in Montana. And if I don't, I get the general unit or general tag combination. Colorado, the deer hunt that I usually do there is, you know, I drew it. I've drawn it with 1 point. I've drawn it with 0 points. This year I drew with 1 point. And over the counter elk there too. You know, if I get back to Arizona, it'll be because I'm applying for those easy to draw hunts again. I figure I'll just work hard. You know, I saw plenty of great animals last year. I mean, I passed up more bulls on that Arizona archery hunt last year than, you know, I mean, double digit bulls in 10 days. Maybe it was 14. That I just you know, once you see one of the great ones, then you're, you know, you keep seeing all these 5 points and 5x6s, and it's like, yeah, just kind of had to hold out. so yeah, you gotta I kind of apply for a little mixed bag there, but you gotta make sure you got enough tags that you can, you know, hunt as much as you want to hunt, then. And then once I hit them, you know, a lot, and that's, I'm a big fan also of hunting the same areas every year. I mean, once I find a good spot, unless something devastating comes through there, which I'm kind of glad I didn't draw maybe in Wyoming this year, because I have been hunting Western Wyoming and it got hammered pretty hard with the winter this year. Mm-hmm. But unless something changes, I mean, I'm going to be applying for the same areas because I want to, you know, I feel like I'm going to be more successful, more productive hunting the same areas, learning more about it. You know, sure, it's fun to go try new things and new experiences, but the units are pretty big. You can find new little spots and have a plan A, plan B, as many as you want. Just add a couple new spots every year because some of your other spots are going to dry up year to year. Not every year is going to be the same when you get in there, but mm-hmm. but if you look at something like when you do draw something new, like that moose tag that I drew, I mean, I put together a list kind of questions that I wanted to ask people that knew the area. And I'm lucky enough to have a friend that lives pretty close to the unit that knows it well. And he gave me some spots to look at. So instantly I'm scouring Google Earth and I'm learning the lay of the land basically first. It's not a giant unit, so I'm looking at roads, looking at camping spots. You know, is this going to be something I'm going to have to be backpacking in for, or is it something I'd be more productive to day hunt in and just do like little 2-3 mile observation loops? And moose are big, so I've never hunted. I'm also doing research on how just to kill a big moose, because
right,
I mean, all I know is what I see on TV and what I read in magazines. So this has been, you know, I've got I started a thread on Rockslide basically saying, you know, well, do I use my bugle tube from elk hunting? Do I bring a scapula like you see a lot of the guides up in Alaska use them for raking trees? And I don't know what to do. So, mm-hmm. But I find the name of the biologist in the area. I gave them a call and then, you know, I had a bunch of questions for him that were like, you know, what's the general health of the herd doing? Are the numbers up or down? With bull to cow ratios, proximity to water, is there water up high? Is there water? Is there any dry spots? And you know, I try to avoid questions like, you know, where are all the bulls? Where are the big bulls? Do you know? But you can kind of slide a question in there maybe that says, you know, where wouldn't you hunt? If you were hunting in this area, you know, are there any areas that don't have water? Moose like water.
Big time.
If you've got dry basins, well, you're probably better off looking where some of there's going to be, you know, they need more water than deer. So, in Idaho, I was worried about, concerned about, you know, grizzlies in the area. So I confirmed that there's, you know, well, no one would say that there's not any grizzlies in the area, but it's definitely not, it's not grizzly central.
Gotcha.
Checking out wolves, you know, asking the game or the biologist, you know, what type of elevations do the moose frequent? You know, what's their primary food? Are there any burns, clear cuts? Is there any logging going on? Winter kill, which I found out even that the winter that Idaho dealt with this past year, you know, the moose are built to survive that. That's pretty much what everybody's told me. It's like they're fine. I always like to find out who the outfitters are in the area. I hunt solo, so I'm lucky enough here that I've got two different friends that have horses and stock that have already offered to help me once I do get a moose down in the area. So I'll have them on standby, but I don't always have that. So, you know, I usually try to get a hold of the outfitter in the area and say, listen, you know, if I get a, this is usually elk hunting, like if I get a bull down in a spot where it's going to take me 2 days, but it's crazy warm and I don't have a, you know, a thermal corridor or, you know, creek or something I can submerge the meat. So I've got no other options. I'm going to make that phone call and I want to have someone with horses that's willing, you know, or able to be hired to help me get them out. Cause you don't always have friends in the area with stock. So, and sometimes the outfitter will tell you straight up, you know, this is where we always have our main camp. These are the basins we hunt. And basically I think they're, you know, it's like the mark of their territory, peeing on a log, but, and I'm okay with that. You know, and I don't want that confrontation either. I don't want, even if there's the majority of the animals in there, I'll stay clear. There's nothing that's more frustrating than backpacking in 5 or 6 miles and then starting to glass and seeing more people than you do animals.
No kidding.
So, and that's another thing I asked, you know, the game wardens and the biologists, how is the hunting pressure in there? Is it, where do animals go when the pressure starts? Does the heaviest pressure come from, close to trailhead? Does it, you know, do most people burn right past the first 3 miles? And, you know, there's some spots like that that have nice hiking trails and, you know, 4, 5, 6 miles. Well, that's where everybody goes. And they walk right by some animals sometimes. Besides logging, you know, mining operations, is there, you know, other things in there that could be, you know, you hike into this beautiful basin and then you realize that there's a salt mine in there or something in there, and it just, you know, other places to avoid. So it's, there's lots of, you know, I hunt in new states too. I mean, you know, one of my first questions when I called the biologist was, or the game warden in Idaho was, what about deadheads? You know, if this was a bad winter, am I going to, and I come across a beautiful buck that didn't make it through the winter, can I pick the sucker up? Every state's different. And the last thing, you know, I live for this. So the last thing I want to do is jeopardize, you know, I pick up a deadhead skull with, you know, take it down to the truck when I leave, and then you get a fine from that. And you're like, wait, well, this is legal where I live, but some states you can't. So,
Yep.
So, and the biologist had a funny response a game warden when I asked him. He says, yeah, you can pick them up, but you got to bring them over to my house if they're big. So, and actually he was incredibly helpful and sounds like, you know, be a great guy. And everybody usually is, you know, I hear stories about guys calling, you know, a warden or a biologist and them being difficult to get a hold of. And then, they may be being a little off on the phone, but I don't know. Maybe it's the way people ask questions, because everybody I've talked to has been pretty nice. You know, the first thing I do when I get a hold of them is thank them for their time and, you know, make sure that they know that you appreciate them. You know, they're probably underpaid for the work they put in but, you know, little things like, you know, I didn't know about, you know, I've heard that, in Alaska, there are some areas you can't debone your moose quarters. Well, that's going to put a big hurting on me if I can't, debone them, because I'm looking at, you know, 150 pound quarter or hind quarter. Yeah. That's not going to go over well, packing out. So
right. They,
yeah, I don't, does not have, you know, he said, go, you know, feel free to debone whatever you want. So we still have to leave proof of sex on there, just like, with elk. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's, you know, and from there, you know, I always try to find out where all the gas stations are in the area. So, you know, you come out of the mountain after 5-7 days, if you're backpack hunting, and you want to go get a quick shower, that's another thing. I find all the gas stations or camping places that have showers. Cause, you know, I'm all for jumping in a creek and cleaning off in a little stream.
Very quickly.
But yeah, sometimes it's 20 degrees and snowing. And it's like, okay, yeah, hot water right now sounds really nice. So, always have that stuff figured out.
Before we move too far past the game wardens and the biologists, I just have a few questions about that. Do you usually call a game warden and a biologist? And mm-hmm. if you get a hold of, because usually there's several wardens, biologists yep. there are a little less few of them, but usually there's several wardens. If you get a hold of a warden and he's not super, he or she is not super helpful, do you try and call another warden? Okay.
Yeah, I definitely would. But I've been pretty lucky. Everyone I've ever called has been pretty easy to talk to. But yeah, I definitely, and I've actually even called back on different days. I've called and talked to a biologist, and they are more than happy to answer your questions. But they said, well, but the guy you really need to talk to is Rich. Rich isn't here. You know, and they talked to me for a half hour, but then, you know, I called back on Rich's day when he was working and, you know, talked to him. So yep. You know, it's funny. Once you get talking to them, they want to help. Especially if you don't just act like a lazy guy and just be like, well, tell me where they're all at. Tell me where the big ones are. If you ask smart questions and if they see that you're putting in, you know, the solid effort and you're not looking for a GPS location of where they're at, they're more than willing to help. And actually a lot of times, you know, like, in Colorado where I, deer and elk hunt, the outfitter there is, he doesn't advertise and he just takes out a couple people a year. So if you just went on the internet, you'd never find him. The only way I was actually able to get his phone number was through the game biologist, and he knew him. He gave me his number, and, it came in handy. I think it was 2014. It was 75 degrees, and I ended up chasing a herd about Well, I was 5 miles into my truck, and I think I chased him about another 4 miles after that. And I didn't have – this was before the Onyx Maps, mobile thing on the phone. And I had paper maps, but I didn't know it was a road a mile away, but I had no way of knowing that. And looking at packing that stuff back 9-10 miles just wasn't going to happen in 75-degree heat. So I made the call. So that helped me there. Without that, I might have been in trouble. But I try to make sure that all my T's are crossed and my I's are dotted before I leave home. All that stuff is taken care of. And the only thing when I leave the house I got to think about is getting there, getting up, getting the boots on, and finding animals. So everything else should be taken care of when I leave the house.
Gotcha. Do you... When you were talking about, you like to hunt units or states that you can hunt every year, do mm-hmm. you find that when you're getting, start looking at the general tag that Montana offers or the general tag that Utah offers, are you able to, with that general tag, because I know like in Wyoming, when you get a general tag, you can hunt multiple units. So are you finding the same thing with those other states that when you get a general tag, you can hunt, you're not restricted to a certain unit, or do you need to pick a unit within that general tag?
With Utah for the general deer tag, and again, this is the first year I've hunted it, but you do have to apply for a specific unit.
Gotcha.
From looking at the points that it's taken to draw this unit, I'll probably be able to hunt it every other year. The Montana general tag, you get to hunt any and all of the general units for both deer. I shouldn't say both deer now. Some of them are general for deer, some of them are general for elk, but not necessarily the same. Because I know I've hunted units before where I couldn't shoot a deer if I saw it in there, and conversely the other way for deer. So that's a great tag. The general tag, and obviously the general elk tag in Wyoming covers a lot of the state, and that's a fantastic tag, but so is the general tag in Montana. And I've wondered why, I guess it was the price increase that they put up a few years ago, they had made it so they haven't been selling out of those tags. And I always wondered, man, there's so many people that don't go out hunting because they don't draw a tag, but all they had to do was basically go buy a leftover general tag in Montana, and they're into some... There's some great bulls in those general units if you just work a little bit. And actually, I think this year, I shouldn't say that, because this year I think they actually did sell out. And I'm actually toying right now with the idea myself of turning back my general tag, because I don't know if I'll have time for it. But Montana offers a pretty cool way. If you turn the tag in before, I think it's August 1st, I think you get 80% of paid in back. Which is expensive. It's one of the more expensive tags. But you can literally wait until, I think, the start of the firearm season before turning in and still get 50% off or 50% back. So, I'll be starting in Utah, I think, I think it's the 19th of August with my deer hunt. And then going from there, well, I shouldn't say it. When I leave the house here first, I'll go to Colorado, scout probably like the second week of August for 3-4 days, go to Utah, scout for 4 or 5 days, then hunt Utah, and then go back to Colorado, hope to hopefully some bucks that I'd already found, hopefully in time to catch the opener there. I think it's the last Saturday in Colorado of August in Colorado. Hopefully be able to get a deer and an elk in short order and get my butt over to Idaho for the moose. And then I have no idea what to expect. I don't know if it's, I know I've been told that a 40-inch bull in there is doable, but I'll have to work to find one. So I don't know if that means a week. I don't know if that means a month. So I kind of don't want to turn that Montana general tag back in, because if it only takes me a week, it's September 15th and I'm not going to be ready to go home at that point. So
right?
I don't want to chase them out. So the freezers and coolers will be full, hopefully, by that point.
Yeah.
But I am pretty picky, too, about what I shoot. So it's...
Nothing wrong with that.
No.
If it's not going to excite you when you pull the trigger, then why do it, right?
Oh yeah, no, it's just mature animals. Unique animals get me going.
Me too. I really, man, non-typical stuff just soup is just really interests me, you know, because part of me is like, man, what happened to make it grow like that, you know?
Oh yeah, just, genetic. I think it's a lot of genetics because, and that's another. I did draw another tag that's for later in the fall. I always get a Kansas archery tag, and every year I apply for the additional like stamp they put on your tag that makes it so it's not just a whitetail tag; it's a either species, so you can hunt mule deer or whitetail. And I see some monster mule deers every year down there that I cannot chase. And there's a lot of non-typical genes. I've seen some goofy stuff down there, including two of them last year that, and they, it was good that I didn't have a tag last year because they needed a little bit of time. But I think this year the one will at least be a 4.5 and 4.5 year old. And they're, I'm pretty excited to have finally drawn that either species stamp. It's going to be a fun hunt, but that'll be in November. So
awesome. Now with, you know, kind of like Nebraska, Ohio, Iowa, you know, Kansas, when you're hunting those places, mm-hmm. are you, because the common thought is, man, that's a lot of farm ground. It seems like everything would be private. So, you know, are you, did you meet some people and you're, you know, they let you hunt or do you try and focus on walking areas or what's kind of your game plan in that situation?
In Kansas, I have, I've hunted both private and the walk-in hunting areas, the WIH. I've killed good bucks on it. There's a, you know, and I'm not going to say what kind I look for because it's one of my secrets I'm gonna keep. But
that's
definitely
cool. That's
there
cool.
are certain there are walk-in units that you can go right to the Fish and Game in Kansas there and get the map of all the landowners that have enrolled their land in this, and that shows you know where each one's at, and it breaks it all down, and then I would say that's probably been 20% of the hunting I've done in Kansas. Most of it's been on private land that I had the fortune of being introduced to some ranchers that they just become friends. You know, they've come up north here and fished with me, and you know we send jokes back and forth all summer long, and they're just good people. And it's also one of the hunts every year where I don't have to sleep in a tent. Sometimes I still do, but a lot of times that they'll offer up a room or even a barn or something. That's fine. But as far as Illinois and Iowa, when I've hunted there in Ohio, that's all been on private. But it's been, you know, it's just friends of friends. And in most all this property, I think every single property that I hunt in every one of those Midwestern states, I'm not the only one hunting it. The farmers, employees, in both Illinois and Iowa, it's the same farmer. It's right on the Mississippi. And the guy in Ohio, all his employees hunt it. The local tow truck guy hunts it. I mean, you name it. There's a lot of pressure. And the same thing in Kansas. They don't say no to too many people. But I think it's different for firearm season in Kansas. But as far as archery goes, I've been yet to be turned down when I knock on a door. In the last 2 years, I've gained five more ranches. And wow. I mean, these are big chunks of land too. And they're super friendly. I mean, you know, I just good people, and you know, they'll even offer to show you the lay of the land, and you know, show them my maps and stuff. And then I know where it's at already. But they're, it's good to have both options. The walk-in hunting in Kansas, though, is probably there's some good public land hunting you can do in Western Kansas. But
that's cool. As now, are you utilizing, you know, like I mean, you've obviously hunted there multiple times, so you know where to apply now. But is Kansas an over-the-counter tag or? Or are you looking at draws for hunting states like Kansas and Ohio and stuff, or those where you know there's so many whitetails they're over the counter?
No, it's it's not over the counter, but they I think it's been pretty much 100% draw for the last few years.
Gotcha.
I think there are units in Kansas in the southeast that are not. I think they might be a little bit harder to draw, but at least where I've been drawing or applying, it's if it hasn't been 100%, it's been real close to it. I'd hate to, yeah, if I didn't draw that tag, I'd be pretty bummed, because that's my last, usually my last hunt of the year, and besides hunting back here at home, and it's definitely a lot of fun.
Awesome. That's cool that you're able to hunt that many states and do it all, you know, obviously from, because it's, you know, getting started into hunting multiple states, like we just said a little while ago, is it's kind of scary at first, and you just kind of step over that boundary and hunt one out-of-state tag, and then it like clicks, and you're like, oh, well, this isn't that bad. You know, I can start doing more of this. So, how much weight do you put on scouting a unit in person and having boots on the ground, or do you mostly rely on things like Google Earth to do that?
Both. I want to know before I get there, you know, where the roads are at, the stuff that you can tell on Google Earth, you know, what accesses, what trailheads, you know, an idea of what maybe the, you know, the trails are going to be like, and where you're going to be accessing. But once you get there, yeah, that's why I usually leave early. You know, I'll leave, like I said, I think that archery tag in Utah opens on the 19th of August, and I'm planning on leaving here probably right around the 10th. So I'll drive to Colorado and scout for a few days, and then Utah and scout for a few days. And I've that tag in Colorado, I've hunted it a couple times. I've got more days scouting than I do hunting that tag. I've killed every buck I've ever killed in there on the first or second day of the season.
Wow.
And every year I've been able to follow up with a bull within 2 days as well. So if you figure out where they're at and you don't blow them out, that's half the battle. Have a plan A, B, C, D, and E. And a lot of times people, you know, your biggest buck might be covered up in tents, and that's, you got to make a decision if that's going to be how you want to hunt, or if you want to maybe go with your second biggest buck in a different basin. But, you know, I definitely think, you know, there's nothing that, you know, boots on the ground is the only thing really that gives you a true sense of what a unit feels like. Everything looks small on Google Earth, and there's never failed. Every year I'm looking at a unit, I'm like, oh, this is I can just go to here, and then you get there and you're like, whoa, okay, well, it's taking half a day. And I've got to find another way, because I'm not going down in that canyon. I'm going to stay up on top here and skirt around. And then, yeah, there's learning curves, you know. I don't know how many times I've, you know, been circling around to glass something, and I can't get to it. I can't even get to the edge because of all these cliffs, and you waste half a day. But that's one of the reasons I like going back to the same units. Even if I can't hunt it every year, if I can hunt it every other year, that's, you know, you remember that stuff. And, yeah, it makes you more efficient later.
Yep, absolutely. Now, when you, remind me where you live.
Northern Michigan.
Michigan. So, you know, obviously Colorado isn't just a 2-hour drive. So you said you do a lot of scouting. Do you try and fly and then get a rental vehicle, or do you drive, or what do you do there?
I'm probably going to do that this year, but it'll be the first time. No, what I usually do is I try to get there 4 or 5 days before the season.
Okay, gotcha.
Now I'll backpack in, make a couple loops, take note of where animals are, and then come out, repack, grab the bow, and by that time I'll figure out where I want to go. So that's what I was saying. I've got more days doing that, scouting. You know, each day each season I've been in there, I've probably scouted 5 or 6 days, and it's only taken me 1 or 2 days to kill my deer. So
awesome. That's so cool.
I'd love to. If I lived out west, I probably wouldn't be able to own my own business. I'd be gone all the time, which my guys will probably tell you I am anyways, but And that's why I'm able to do all these hunts. It's just, you know, I am my own boss. And it just comes down to, I have great employees, and it's a matter of how much time do I want to miss equals how much money do I not want to make. Mm-hmm. So I don't make a wage for those 2 months, and the guys keep everything going strong and keep our customers happy and cover bills, but the business. But it's a choice I make that, you know, I'd rather forego the 2 months of wages and
to do what you love.
I'm only gonna be able to climb these mountains for so many years, and really, I wish I would have, started doing it at an earlier age. But the curse of living, being born, growing up in the Midwest. So
yeah. So really, one of my last questions that I have, because I know that some states, Wyoming, Colorado, for instance, you can get a deer tag and an elk tag for the same unit. You can get that over the counter, like Colorado, you can get that over the counter elk tag, for instance, and then you're able to hopefully apply and get the deer tag. When you're doing that, say it's whether it's Wyoming or Montana, or it doesn't really matter where, but do you try and get a deer and an elk tag in the same unit so you don't have to travel as much? Or do you do? Cool.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, I think the, as a matter of fact, and that's another tag that I failed to mention that I have. As soon as I found out that I drew that moose tag in Idaho, I bought one of the over the counter, general deer tags. So I can, cause I don't know if I'm going to spend 2 weeks in there. I know the area has great genetics for deer. What I've been told is a lot of them don't get to reach the age, but you never know. And if I'm going to spend that much time in there, then there's a chance I'm going to find something. And I try to do that wherever I go, just because in my mind, the regret of seeing a great animal that you don't have a tag for that you could have if you had just bought it is that regret is a whole lot more painful than the regret of spending $300 on a deer tag and not using it. So I'd rather eat the $300 than live with, you know, the fact that I found a 210-inch buck and I had to watch him bedded in a pretty spot and walk away.
No kidding. That probably
ended up my life. I'll forget about the $300 in a few years. So
yep.
But you also have to remember while you're there, and you know, like that in Colorado, I'm there to kill a deer. I've killed good bulls there, bulls over 300 inches, but I'm there to kill a deer, and that's first.
Gotcha.
And that's the majority of the people are doing too. There's elk hunters, but so elk always comes second. If you find yourself glassing elk and glassing deer, and then you're going back and forth and you can't make up your mind, well, should I? And then next thing you know, where'd that buck go? I didn't see him bed. You got to make up your mind what you're doing. Obviously if you're walking down, sneaking down a trail to go on a stalk and something presents itself and you get a gimme, whatever, but, you got to focus. Like when I'm moose hunting in Idaho, that deer tag will be in my pocket, but it won't be, it'd have to be a big, big buck to get me to put the moose on hold. So you got to remember what you're there for and focus on one thing. I think that's something a lot of guys don't do well enough, is focus on what they're there for.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, I think that makes perfect sense. That's because last thing, like you say, you have an awesome, awesome opportunity with your moose tag. And if you lose sight on that and start glassing up way higher than moose live, then obviously you're probably not going to see moose.
Yep.
Awesome.
No, yes.
Well, cool. Well, like I say, Tony, I really, really appreciate it. I learned a ton of stuff, and I hope, and I would assume that all the listeners are going to learn a bunch from this as well. You just made it a lot easier and a lot simpler, and kind of gave people a framework to start hunting multiple states. So I really appreciate you hopping on the show today.
Cool. Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you for tuning into the show. It means a lot to us.
But seriously, though, I really appreciate your ear. And it would mean the world to me if you would rate our podcast. If you didn't like it, 1-star it. But if you did, a 5. is even better. Don't forget to comment, like, share, and hit that subscribe button. Thanks again for tuning into the show. Some other podcasts that you should definitely check out are
Eastman Elevating with Bride and Barney,
and Hunt Harvest Health with Ryan and Hillary Lampers.
Some other YouTube channels to check out:
Hardworking Hunter, Sterling's Extremes Outdoors, and Lane Walter Productions.
And a special thanks to
Maven Optics, Six Sight Gear, Dark Energy Tech, Shield Mountain Outdoors, The Outdoor Insiders, Iron Mind Hunting, Valkyrie Archery, and Gannett Ridge Sporting Equipment.